Thank you, Mrs. Williams. I appreciate that. Thank you, Craig. I appreciate your honesty. I know it was a help to these young people. Hebrews chapter number 12. If you have your Bibles, go with me to Hebrews and chapter number 12. Just curious, how many of you are Cola Clash Plus rookies? This is your very first year here. Can I see your hands, please? Great. I'm glad to see you. I hope you'll be able to come again sometime. And how many are Cola Clash veterans? Can I see the Cola Clash Plus veterans, please? Been here before. Great, you can put your hands down. Just curious, has anybody been hit all, I think this is the fourth one, all four Cola Clash Pluses. Okay, several of you, and you are certainly veterans. Well, I've been certainly thinking and considering what it is God would have us deal with in this particular message. And I'm going to be honest with you, I believe God's leading us to deal with something quickly here. We're going to have to move through a passage of Scripture. And I've been on a journey this summer. Some here at Falls Baptist Church know, because I presented a series of messages at the beginning of the school year and our revival meeting and our opening. And I am going to try to take some of that, and as well as the material here in Hebrews chapter 12, and we'll try to put it all together. I appreciate so much Craig being honest about some of the issues in his own life. And I find really what Craig had to say, it may be a little bit different, but the truth is a lot of young people come to points in their life where they really do struggle. And as a result, sinful choices are made, and many times addictions, sinful addictions began in their life. And as a result of that, they find there's some sometimes bound by sin and they can't seem to get out. And we're going to deal with a couple things here, first of all, in this message, and then tonight, in the message tonight, that will, I believe, really relate to what Craig said about how you can be free. As he mentioned, you can be free. And you don't have to live in that bondage thinking that you're just stuck. When I was doing a little bit of research on the burdens God gave me this summer, I came across a book and was reading it, and it basically said there are four cycles when it comes to addictions. Now please understand, when I'm talking about addictions, I am not just talking about drugs, alcohol, pornography. I am talking about video games. I'm talking about anything that becomes an unrealistic coping mechanism in your life. In other words, something that's inordinate, maybe is a better word, an inordinate coping mechanism you use in your life. Some are respectable, some are not. There are some people who spend money they don't have because they get a dopamine hit when they get a new clothes or buy something, and so they spend money they don't have, go deep into credit card debt, and that's an addiction. And that's a coping mechanism, and it doesn't work. But I studied it out, and I actually, in my reading, I should say, there were four steps when it comes to addictions. I found it kind of fascinating. The very first step is there is an addictive root. There's a root. And I was very helped by understanding there's a root. And many times, the root is overlooked. And it's neglected. And so when the root is not dealt with, then you can try to pull off the problem, but it'll come back because the root's still there. You ever pulled up a weed? I remember as a kid, my parents sometimes would ask me to go out and pull weeds up. And I learned very quickly, if you didn't get it out by the roots, you're going to be pulling them next week. You know what I'm talking about? They're coming right back up. So you want to get them all out. You want to get that root out. Well, the truth is, there's an addictive root. And then that gives birth to an addictive mindset. There's now some wrong thinking that comes in that feeds that addictive root, which gives birth to an addictive lifestyle. Let me just simply say this, young person, things that you do that are right come because you think correctly. In other words, correct thinking begets correct action. Wrong thinking begets wrong actions. Every one of you in this room that has wrong actions in your life, I'm going to tell you why. Because you have a wrong mindset. So an addictive mindset always gives birth to an addictive lifestyle. Then when you get into the addictive lifestyle, there is what Craig just alluded to very well, there's an addictive cloak. In other words, you try to act like you don't have that problem. For instance, some of you do video games deep in the night. You don't get up the next morning and say, hey, Mom and Dad, I did video games at 4 in the morning. No, you act like you didn't do it, even though you're falling asleep in school and everybody can tell something's wrong. I'm seeing kids today fall asleep that never did before. In other words, not like that is, and I realize what it is. These kids are many times spending inordinate time on video games, and the reason is because it's an addiction. And some of you know what I'm talking about because you're in it. And you may even say, I don't want to do that anymore, but you do. See, you're into addictive lifestyle, and now you have an addictive cloak. You try to hide it all, do the best you can to hide it all. But the truth is, you will never get true victory until you deal with the addictive root. And I want to just real quickly run through a passage of Scripture that deals with the addictive root. Now, there are other things that are important tonight. We'll deal with the fact the addictive cloak. You've got to deal with the addictive cloak. And if you'll notice in Craig's testimony, there was never the freedom in the dealing with it until he put it all on the table. He had to get rid of the cloak, the addictive cloak. You have to get rid of the addictive cloak. You have to, the people that love you, care about you, responsible for you, you have to get honest. And we'll talk about that more tonight. But Hebrews chapter number 12 is a very interesting chapter. Now, this is going to shock you, and many of you, I know when you hear this, you're going to say, man, I am so glad I came to Cold Clash Plus, because you're going to think, wow, this is profound. Now, you're going to be shocked by this, but hang on. This is going to be rough. Did you know one of the great things about Hebrews chapter 12 is it follows Hebrews 11? Aren't you glad you came? Unbelievable. You're thinking, wow, that's great. Okay. Now, Hebrews 11 is a chapter on what? Anybody just want to venture me out? We're here just us, so it's a chapter on what? It's a chapter on faith. Now, following this, you have to understand, God has nothing's done by mistake. It's all calculated out. God's a whole lot smarter than we are. But right after that, in Hebrews chapter 12, he deals with something that, I'll be honest with you, for years I don't think I totally understand. I'm sure I don't understand at all, but God began to open my eyes to Hebrews chapter 12. You know what Hebrews 12 is talking about? It's talking about problems. I want to ask you a question. Was Jesus Christ wronged? And the answer is, yeah, he was wronged. He was wronged in so many ways that none of us will ever be wronged like Jesus was wronged. We never will be. And Jesus was wronged, and so he becomes an example for us when we're wronged or when difficulties come into our life and hardships. Now, let's begin reading here in Hebrews chapter number 12. We're going to have to move quickly, so hang with me, because we're going to take a rocket ride through Hebrews chapter number 12. It says, wherefore, seeing we also are compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses. Okay, we've got a lot of people who are examples of people of faith. Let us lay aside every weight, the sin which does so easily beset us, and let us run, here's the key, with patience, the race that is set before us. That word is going to be used several times. Looking unto Jesus, the author and the finisher of our faith. He's clearly the key to our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross. That's the verbal form of the word patience, okay? Endured the cross, despising the shame, and is set down at the right hand of the throne of God. For consider him that endured, there's the word again, third time now, second verb, of course, patience was the noun. For consider him that endured such contradiction, here it is, of sinners. In other words, I'm going to simply say this, that Jesus was wronged by sinners. Can I say this? Jesus lived in a world of sinners, and you do too. Now, you know what happens when you live in a world of sinners? You get wronged. Difficult things happen. Hard things happen. And as a result of that, you're at a crisis. Now, I remember growing up, I thank the Lord. My parents, no parents are perfect, but they certainly walk with God, were great examples of faith, and I thank God for them. And I don't ever remember anything from their hands or lips that hurt me. And so I'm grateful for that. But I remember growing up thinking when people preach about bitterness or hurt and some of those things, I couldn't really kind of relate with it, because that was not really what my home was about. But you know, when I got out and got into the real world, so to speak, you know what I found? People get hurt. Sometimes I get hurt. In other words, people say things, people do things, and hard things happen. And now, young person, when that happens, when people sin against you, people sinned against Jesus. There's contradiction of sinners. And the Bible is going to tell us in a moment about this. And the key is the word endured and patience. We're going to come back to that in a moment. But you know, some of you in this room have been wronged. Now, the thing that struck me when I was reading that book on addictions, particularly sexual addictions, dealing mostly with pornography, well, when I was reading that book, it was very instructive that the most commonplace addictive root is pain. Wounds, hurt. And there are dear young people in this room, the truth is, you've been hurt. And you got some pain, you got some wounds, it's your addictive root. It's why you went through the addictive mindset, which was wrong thinking that came out of the hurt, which produced a wrong lifestyle, addictive lifestyle. Now this passage is going to, believe it or not, the Bible is so amazing, it's going to deal with that. And the truth is, some of you in this room, you've been hurt by what we might call passivity. Sometimes I deal with teenagers that are very bitter. In fact, let me just give you this story. Years ago, I was preaching in a western state. I finished preaching Sunday school, and the pastor came up. He was a couple years older than I, and he had tears in his eyes. He said to the congregation, I realized something while Brother Van Gelderen was preaching this morning I've never realized. He said, I see it now. All my life, I've been bitter at my dad. He said, you have to understand, my dad was a good man. He had a good work ethic. He'd go to work. He'd work hard. He'd bring home the money to feed the family, clothe the family, meet my needs. But when he came home, he'd turn on the television, pick up the newspaper, and live in his own world. And he said, my dad never engaged me in a father-son relationship. We didn't go fishing. We didn't do anything. And he said, I realized for years I have been bitter at my father for his passivity in parenting. Now, I bring that up because some of you can relate with that. And there perhaps there's that disappointment in your life, and that brings pain. But sometimes it's not just passivity. I'm talking to some of you have good fathers in the sense they bring home money. They pay for you to go to school or do things. But you feel like they do not engage you in a parent relationship. It could be a mother. Most of the time, I'd be honest with you, it's a father. Practically speaking, in 35 years of ministry. Sometimes it's things that are more active. But some of you have that situation in your life, and it's caused some difficulty in your life. Maybe it goes into what I call sometimes a low-grade resentment, and which turns into bitterness, which really is bitterness, which the passage is going to deal with in a moment. Others in this room have had things happen that are difficult. I remember one years ago having a team member that talked about the fact that when she got into her 12-year-old, into that age, she realized that her parents' marriage was terrible. And as a result of that, she got very bitter. She said for whatever reason, they kind of hid it before, but at 12 years old, they couldn't hide it anymore. And she saw they'd come home, close the door, fight like cats and dogs, go to church, and everybody thought they were a model Christian family. And the duplicity burned her up. And she had hurt in her life, deep bitterness for the parents not getting along. So some of you understand that. Some of you maybe have an angry father. I've dealt with many young men, very many young men, who will tell me the father has said very hurtful things to them, very difficult things. And you know what it does? It creates pain, hurt, wounds. And I'm talking to young men in this room who some of you really struggle in the moral arena. Your brain's a garbage pit. You've looked at filth. You can't kick the garbage in your life. And you don't realize that one of the reasons is you have a low-grade resentment. You have bitterness in your heart and life. And you're not responded correctly to those wrongs. And as a result, you find yourself now in an addictive lifestyle. Doing things behind your parents' back and things that you know you ought not be in. And you sit here very defeated. Now, I'm telling you, there is a way out, gang. There is a way out. Because the Bible says Jesus endured contradiction of sinners. Okay, he's going to be the example. He's the one we look to. And he's the one that can pull us out of this mess. It's looking unto Jesus. It's all about faith. It's all about believing God, depending on Him. We'll say more about it as the days go on. But let's continue on here in verse number 3 again. For consider him that endured such contradiction of sinners against himself, lest ye be wearied and faint in your minds. Ye have not resisted unto blood, striving against sin. Jesus did, but we don't. And ye have forgotten the exhortation which speaketh unto you as unto children. Notice this. My son, despise not thou the chastening of the Lord, nor faint when thou art rebuked of Him. Now, maybe if I could say this, this comes to seem an interesting thing here. The word chastening is a very interesting word. In fact, if you were to study the Greek language, you would find that the word child and the word chastening have the same root word. So really, the idea of chastening is child training. Now, we think of chastening only in the negative. Maybe sometimes back when I was a kid, we called it going to the woodshed. Some of you have no clue what that means. But it's the idea of getting in trouble, okay? It's chastening, okay? So we think of it in that regard, but actually the word is broader than that. The word here has the idea of anything a parent would do to train us. I think of the fact that I had a wonderful father who was a great disciplinarian, which I'm now very grateful for, but he also was a good trainer. In other words, he would train me. Now I look back, he'd train me how to navigate an airport. He'd train me about life, just so many life skills, mowing a lawn, whatever. My dad was constantly training. That's child training. That's the word here. Now clearly the negative is in view here, but here's what God, I believe, is saying. Everything that comes into your life, I want to use to train you. Everything. Now realize, friends, that God is not cause sin. He doesn't tempt anybody with evil. The Bible says he doesn't tempt us with evil. So God is not the one who causes there to be sin. He made you a free moral agent. Do you know what free moral agents to do? They can choose. You are not a robot. You know how we know that? Because many of you, even today or yesterday on the way here, you sinned. And what I mean by that is, some of you on the way to the church yesterday, you were unkind to your mom, said some unkind things. In fact, pretty much you do that every morning on the way to school. You're short with her. You make sinful choices that brings pain into your mother's heart. You don't even care. You know why? You're a free moral agent. Did you know that God does not step down and make you do right? You can make a choice to treat your mom like dirt. Some of you do it all the time. And all my point is, friends, when that happens, when you are wronged, when you make sinful choices and hurt other people, they're at a crisis. When other people make sinful choices that hurt you, you're at a crisis. Because God is simply saying here, I want to take all that and I want to train you. I want to show you how to navigate life. I want to show you, just like I endured contradiction of sinners, I want to show you how to do this. But I'm going to train you. I'm going to try to train you on this, but you've got to make some steps of faith. But the truth is, normally we don't. God says there's two wrong windows to go out when you're wrong. Window number one that is wrong to go out is to despise it. That stinks. That rots my dad. Man, I can't believe he said that. That makes me so angry. That's the first wrong window. Some of you have gone out of that many times in your life. It may be a coach. It may be somebody else who's wrong. Why'd that have to happen? Man, that ruined my sports year season. Man, that messed up my vacation summer. Man, that was... Okay, that's the idea. It's despising. In other words, it's looking at a very difficult, somebody wronging you, somebody not doing exactly what you think you should do, and maybe enduring some contradiction of sinners, but you despise it. And when you despise it, gang, you now are in a situation where the pain and the wound will not heal. And now you have an addictive root. Now, the addiction may not be there yet, but see, some of you, why do you spend hours on video games? Have you ever thought about how moronic it is? I don't know about you. I like the real life. I'm not interested in a virtual life. I'm pretty excited about what's going on in the real existence. See, the point is why? Because some of you have, you don't even understand why. You got this addictive root. You've got this low-grade resentment, or maybe this bitterness or this anger that boils beneath the surface, and you're angry and frustrated because of maybe some things that were said to you, or some things that happened, or things that, whatever, you feel wronged about, and you despise it. Instead of seeing that God's up there saying, listen, I will take this and work this together for good. I want to train you. I want you to show you how to navigate life like I did when I was on planet Earth. So despising it. The second thing you can do is, notice the Bible says, faint under it. Now here's what the fainter does. The fainter says, I'm worthless. I can't do anything right. I'll never do anything right. I'm just bad. And you go into what we talked about a few weeks ago here in the opening, shame. And shame is basically when you unfortunately bring lies about who you are. You see, friends, you have to understand, you cannot let Satan define you by unkind things that have been said to you. You cannot let Satan define you even by your sinful past. You see, God does not want you to be defined by your sinful past, nor does he want you to be defined by unkind and untrue things that were said to you. He wants you to be defined by what he says you are in Jesus Christ. See? So, fainting under it is when you just, and many times, these are the kids with angry parents. They faint. They just throw their hands up and say, I'm worthless. I can't do anything right. My dad's told me that I can't do anything right. And they throw their hands up. They get discouraged. They faint. Some people get angry and despise. That stinks, that rots. Why'd that have to happen? Okay, so those are the two wrong windows out. And if you go out the despise window or you go out the discouragement window, I can promise you this, you will end up later in the chapter in what the Bible calls the root of bitterness. You are going to have a root of bitterness, and that's the addictive root, okay? That's the pain that you are now harboring and not letting God heal. And the problem with pain is you will always try to medicate it. Now, we're not talking about physical pain. How many, you will be honest, you get pretty severe headaches. Can I see your hands, please? Okay. Those of you that get severe headaches, I'm with you on this, okay? I can get this. This is my malady in life. Do you know what I do when I wake up with a migraine? I'm telling you what I do. I go get something on my stomach, 2 extra strength, etc. Man, that stuff is unbelievable. You know what I do? I medicate the pain. Now, in that case, maybe there's other things that might be better. I don't know. Some people say magnesium, whatever. I don't know. But the point is, I want to get rid of the pain. I want to get rid of the pain. I don't want to go on. In fact, if I don't do it, I can't preach. I can't function. I have to get the pain medicated if I have a bad migraine. So all of us understand pain. You want to get rid of it. You want to medicate it. But emotional pain, when you have begun to harbor and allow those things to fester in your heart and life, you are going to medicate it. Now, young person, I want you to understand, and I don't want you to miss this. Our world is throwing at you many things that they will try to get you to medicate your pain, or I call them also coping mechanisms. The truth is, I'm going to tell you this, the absent, I'm not trying to in any way be irreverent here, but the ultimate coping mechanism is Jesus Christ. He is the ultimate coping mechanism. And the point is, when you turn to video games or technology or recreational internet use or social media or whatever, pretty soon what happens is you go there and you have dopamine releases. There is a pleasure that comes out of those things. And sometimes when it becomes addictive, it becomes inordinate. And I did some study on this, watched some on this. They're basically saying that when dopamine floods the brain, when it is not natural, it begins to destroy dopamine receptors, which means that the next time you have to have more. And that's one of the great tragedies of pornography. You guys that have looked at pornography, you flood your mind with dopamine receptors that God never intended that kind of dopamine to flood in there, and you destroy those dopamine receptors, and doing so to get the same high, you have to have more. It's unnatural. And you literally began to destroy part of your brain. I saw a picture of a brain of a cocaine addict next to a picture of a brain of a pornography addict, and the pornography addict's brain was worse off, more destroyed. But see, the point is you're turning to dopamine releases in an inordinate fashion, that video games, whatever, and you become addicted. It also, I think, begins to affect the front lobe of your brain. And many of you may not realize this, but at age 25, guess what happens to your car insurance? Anybody know? It goes down. You know why? Because the front lobe of your brain is at that point fully developed. At this point, I am looking at a room full of people whose front lobe of their brain is not fully developed. And I can tell you about some of our Baptist College of Ministry students, that's why we have a dean of men and a dean of women. Why? Because their front lobe is not fully developed. Because when it's fully developed, they call it the brakes. It's the part of your brain that says, no, that's moronic, don't do that. Junior high kids don't have any of that. Okay, I mean, they have no front lobe. There's no front lobe there. Okay, they don't brakes, what's that? Okay, but anyway, so that's why they have a mom and a dad who have a fully developed front lobe. To say to the junior high kid, you're not doing that again. See, the point, friends, is, but that begins to be destroyed. And that's why they say a teenager who gets into drugs or alcohol is far more likely to be an addict than somebody who gets it into in their 20s. Because they destroy the front, they destroy the brakes. I'm just telling some of you guys out here, you're messing around looking at garbage, you are playing with fire. And you're trying to cope with pain in your life the wrong way. And it comes because instead of looking to Jesus, you are now, you're in a situation where you're despising, why did that have to happen, it stinks. Or you're discouraged, I'm worthless, I can't do anything right, what's the use? And Craig gave a little bit of testimony. I think Craig probably partially would be honest, or was giving an honest assessment that perhaps his was discouragement, feigning. Okay, so the point is, those are the wrong ways to go when there's contradiction of sinners in your life. You say, well, preacher, what's the right window? Well, Jesus is already alluding here. God's already alluding to it. It's the word patience or the verb endure. Go down to verse number 7. It says, if you endure chastening, God dealeth with you as with sons. For what son is he whom the Father chasteneth not? Now, here's the key. God is simply saying, hey, listen. If you want me to deal with you in a father-son, you want a father-son relationship, I want it too, but here's the key. You must endure chastening. Now you say, preacher, what does that mean, endure chastening? Well, the word endure, the word patience, the noun form, comes from two Greek words. One is the word meno, which is the great verb of John 15, abide in me. The first is a preposition, hupo, so hupo meno is basically it. And don't miss this, gang. The idea of patience is to trust God under pressure. I could have put it this way. It's to believe God and trust God in the frying pan. It's to trust God when life's going haywire. It's to trust God and depend on God when you're wronged. That's the right window. So there's three windows you can go out whenever you're wronged, whenever somebody sins against you, whenever something difficult happens, whenever hard things come into your life. You've got three windows you can go out. You can despise it. That stinks. That rots. Why'd that have to happen? That messed everything, ruined everything. Usually the word blame might be in there. The second would be discouragement. I can't do it. This is, forget it, man. I can't, whatever. The last one is, God, this is tough. This is hard, but God, you walked with the children of Israel in their furnace. God, I'm trusting you to walk with me in my furnace. That's hupomeno. Hupomeno is walking with Jesus in the furnace. It's trusting him when you got some pretty serious pain in your life. It's trusting him to heal you, to deliver you. Now, we looked at this passage, and for time, I'm trying to pick and choose because I can't preach the whole passage here in the time. But if you look at this passage, it tells us that if you endure, there's some really good things that happen. You partake of the peaceable fruit of righteousness. In other words, righteousness becomes a part of your life. I love verse 11. Now, no chastening for the present seemeth to be joyous, but grievous. Nevertheless, afterward, it yieldeth the peaceable fruit of righteousness unto them which are exercised thereby. The word exercise is the passive voice of the word gymnasium we get from. It has the idea of somebody who's training you. So the idea is, if you want God to act in a father role and to father you, and you want God to be your trainer through the trials, God says simply this: trust me in the fire, and I will train you. I will train you. I will lead you. I'll help you. I'll train you. And I will, just as a father, as a son, I'll be in a father-son relationship. But you see, friends, you put your arm in God's face and despise and get discouraged that God can't do what he wants to do because of your unbelief. You're limiting God through unbelief. The other passage here, for time's sake, won't go into another verse, talks about being partakers of his righteousness. Wow. Of his holiness. The idea, friend, is when you learn to trust God under, he begins to teach you how to partake of his righteousness so that God enables you to do what you never thought you could do. We'll talk a lot about that tomorrow, but I want you to see it. It's in this passage. But as the passage goes on, we'll go to the back part of it here, of the text that I want to deal with, and we'll look, if you could please, at verses 14 and following. Now, of course, there right in the word right above verse 14 is the word healed. Interesting, isn't it? Follow peace with all men and holiness, without which no man shall see the Lord, looking diligently, lest any man fail of the grace of God. We'll deal with that the last. Lest any root of bitterness springing up trouble you, and thereby many be defiled. You see, friends, the thing about bitterness is this. It springs up when you fail grace. We're going to talk about that in a moment. It springs up when you fail grace and you're troubled. I'm preaching to some young people in this room who are troubled. I guarantee you, if you're staying up late at night playing video games at 2 in the morning, I can just tell you right now, something's wrong. Something is wrong. You are going to the wrong coping mechanism. I'm telling you, Jesus is more satisfying than video games. I'm just telling you, he is. You got the wrong coping mechanism, friend. And what the truth is, you're doing that while you're troubled. You're trying to medicate the pain. Now, when you choose the wrong medicine, you're worse off. You may medicate the pain while you're involved in whatever, but as soon as it's over, you know it comes rushing back, the regret, the waste of time, all of that comes rushing back. It's like the person who goes out on gets the dopamine rush from spending money they don't have, and then, of course, the bill comes and they don't have money to pay it. You see, now they're worse off. The pain's worse. The cycle goes downward. For others in this room, spend too much time on whatever, social media, whatever it might be, and you find... The dopamine hits, when they're gone. And the problem's still there. Certainly, internet pornography is a big one. They say 70% of all the men that sit in the pews of evangelical churches, and that's broader than I'm comfortable with, but 70% of all the men in evangelical churches have had a problem either in the past or in the present in viewing internet pornography. 70%? One particular study I read, it was amazing. They did a study of over 1,000 people who had been involved in sexual addictions, and they found of those thousand people, don't miss this, 97% had experienced emotional abuse. You know what emotional abuse is? Somebody getting angry at them and saying unkind things. 97%. You know what that's telling me? This destructive behavior comes out of medicating pain. A root of bitterness is, that stinks, that ruined me, that messed me up, and now they're going to try to deal with the pain the wrong direction. Now here's what I want you to see that's in the Bible. Look what it says right here. It says, lest any root of bitterness springing up trouble you, and thereby many be defiled, lest there be any fornicator or profane person, as Esau. Now, I just want you to understand this. When there's bitterness in your heart, and there's been a wrong, contradiction of sinners, and you've been wronged or whatever, and difficult things have come into your life, and you've despised or gotten discouraged, God says bitterness comes in, and then it opens the door to two really bad things. Number one, the word fornicator. The word fornicator is the Greek word pornos. We get the English word pornography from it. It literally has two nuances of meaning. Sometimes in the Bible, it accentuates more the premarital aspects of that sin, and other times it's broader, and it talks about the whole arena of moral purity. Now, the truth is, friend, it's pretty obvious, and certainly practically speaking, I've seen this in 34 years, 35 almost now, working with teenagers, the broader meaning is in view here. You ever wonder why a kid graduates from a Christian school and then goes in and moves in with a guy or a girl, you know, they move in, a couple moves in. You're thinking, why, what happened? Actually, it happened a long time ago. They got bitter. Medicating the pain the wrong way. And some of you know what I'm talking about. See, God says, listen, you allowed the root of bitterness. You get that addictive root. You get the wrong thinking, which always comes with the addictive root. Then you get into addictive lifestyles. And God basically says it goes two ways. It can go into addictive behavior, which the whole arena of moral impurity is included here. It certainly can be that. And I remember that young lady that was telling me about her parents, and she herself said when she got bitter, she didn't even know why. But she said, I began to have a thirst for filth. She said, I'd go babysit, put the kids down, try to find the dirtiest stuff I could find on television. She said, when I got right with God about my bitterness at age 16, she said, my thirst for filth was gone. You know why? She got the root out. The addictive root was gone. See, that's the thing. That's why some of you struggle. And I believe this gender identity thing partially comes from this particular issue. And it's an addictive root that isn't being dealt with. And there can be very, very contributing problems that we don't have time to go into to contribute to that. But the point, friends, is simply that God says it opens the door to the arena of moral impurity. That's what it says. Now, notice it also says profane person. Now, what's a profane person? A profane person is, well, God gives us an example. I didn't on the first one because it's pretty obvious. But the second one, he wanted to help us, so he gave us an example. Anybody want to tell me what Old Testament character? God gives us an example of somebody who's profane, and the answer is Esau. Why was Esau profane? Well, you got to understand the word profane. It's the idea of common, common, common. So what did Esau do? He treated God like he was common. Now, I'm just going to say this because some of you need to hear this. Some of you already this day have sat in either a workshop or in a session, and when you left, hit the restroom with some of your buds, you mocked and you made fun. I'm telling you right now, I don't care who you are in this room, you have an addictive root and you know it. See, when people mock and make fun of God or God's people or whatever, that's part of it. It's an attitude toward God. It's a wrong attitude toward God. Not just that way, the kid who spends hours on video games and looks at his Bible maybe 5 minutes is a profane person. Because he looks to something that's worthless in eternity and ignores that which is eternally beneficial. That's what profane people do. It's the kid who's addicted. It's the Netflix Christian, you know, the Christian that lives on Netflix. Why? He cannot find meaning and satisfaction in life, so he tries to find it in Hollywood. Can I just tell you something? Hollywood will never bring you meaning and satisfaction in life. Only Jesus can do that. And some of you are Netflix Christians. Some of you are not, because your parents won't let you, but some of you are. You got your devices on, and you just watch stuff, and you're not careful, and you defile your mind with filth, and you hear God's name taken in vain, and you buy into worldly philosophy, and you're trying to find meaning in life. You think that somehow there's that all that's meaningful. So all these things are coping mechanisms to try to deal with life. and pain and difficulties that have come into your life. And that's what God says. So you either go one way or the other. Either you become a fornicator, you go to the moral impurity route, and that's the girl that plays is more loose in the way that she acts, and the guy that looks at garbage, okay, is kind of the way it plays out, and the gender's there, and that's where it starts there. Or you become a profane person. In other words, God's not a big deal in your life at all. You look to something else other than God to cope with life. Sometimes they're more respectable addictions. It might be the social media, recreational internet. It becomes inordinate. It's what you look to. You become addicted. I'm amazed when I go to airports, and I try not to do it myself, but people are just looking at the thing like, man, they're addicted. It's just everybody's looking at the screen. You ever gone to a restaurant, four people sitting in a restaurant booth all looking at their phones? I'm thinking, that's crazy. But that's why, because they're addicted. That's where they find meaning, or try to. And, of course, it leaves them empty. The point is, friend, a profane person is a person who does not value God. You don't value the Bible. You don't value prayer. You don't value spiritual things. You don't value preaching. You don't value your own time with God. It's not important to you. But other things are. You're on that, man. See, that's a profane person. And I'm talking to dear people, young people in this room. You can go to a Christian school and be loaded with kids who are profane in the sense that God's not important to them. You can be a homeschool and go to a homeschool co-op and around a bunch of kids. God's not important to them. They're profane. See, the point, friends, for all of you in this room is to understand what God is trying to say is, when it comes to a life of faith, you have to understand that life is going to throw you curveballs. People are going to wrong you. Things are going to be said that are difficult. Hardships are going to come. There's so much we could say, but God is simply saying this: the right response is always to trust God under the circumstances. In other words, look to Jesus to meet the need. And tomorrow you're going to spend an hour with God. You know what I'm going to tell you? That's it. Not going through the motions. I'm talking about meeting with God. I was just down in a church in Chesapeake, Virginia. We had a great week in the Christian school. The following week was school camp. We were doing revival meetings, so we weren't doing our full program. And the youth pastor texted us and said, "We've had the best school camp that we have ever had." And he says, 25 of our students, I think they had about 40, have signed up to do the 21-day challenge to spend an hour with God. And you know what I thought to myself? Those kids are learning to find the right coping mechanism. See, why? They're learning to walk with God, learning to trust God under difficulty. That's what Hebrews 12 is all about. God's saying, you're going to get difficulty. You're going to get hurt. People are going to wrong you. That's what this world is all about, a bunch of people that have free wills, that make bad decisions that hurt other people. And God says, I want to train you. I want to get you through this, but you got to trust me. You have to trust me. Now, that brings us to that little phrase at the very beginning, and we're going to just close it down with this. That little phrase at the very beginning of verse number 15, looking diligently lest any man fail of the grace of God. Now, I'm just going to cut to the chase. Some of you, I've preached, I have a whole message on these three verses. Obviously, I've not preached parts of it, but very little of it. I'm preaching the whole chapter. But nonetheless, let me just cut to the chase and tell you this. You fail the grace of God. Let me put it this way. Let me just tell you this. For by grace are you saved through, that's how you access grace. And grace is supernatural. Grace is God at work in your life. Grace is intersecting with God. Grace is so big, sometimes I can't define it. In fact, I never can. I can only try to give you a little idea. Grace is God giving us what we never deserve. But it's practical. It's daily. It's not tangible. It's not physical. It's spiritual. It's real, though. Unspeakable joy, perfect peace, supernatural strength, fulfillment, satisfaction, love, and life. I will tell you, young person, there's nothing like looking up at the sky and thinking, this is great. That's grace. That's grace. Just like Craig said, these last 4 years have been the great years of my life. You know why that is? It's called grace. It's called grace. And the whole point is, you get grace by believing God. Well, that kind of sounds like endure, doesn't it? Trusting God under. When you trust God under, you're going to get grace. And when you don't trust God under, you don't get grace. When you despise and you faint. Now that stinks. That rots. Man, why am I dead? I just wish he'd... No grace. Oh, I'm just worthless, man. I can't do anything right. I'm such a bum. I'll never be used of God. No grace. But you get on your knees and say, God, that's hard. That hurt. But God, you're so big and you're so in control and you love me so much. God, I'm trusting you to work it together for good. See, that's when grace comes. What God is trying to tell each one of you, if you're struggling with low-grade resentment or bitterness or whatever in your life, or you're struggling with an addictive lifestyle, there's a reason. If you're spending time you really do not, should not be spending, and you would say, well, preacher, I'm really not looking at stuff I shouldn't, but you're wasting an inordinate amount of time. You need to realize you've got an addictive root. You have an addiction, and you have a root. And the root probably comes because you have not turned to the right person to heal it or the right thing to heal it. You haven't taken the right medicine, if I can, without being irreverent. And I'm talking to some young people in this room, these next hours and then tomorrow, I'm telling you, you're surrounded by people, and many of our students who understand what I'm speaking because they've walked the trail and are walking the trail of trusting God under. Some of them don't come from most ideal situations. Sometimes I deal with teenagers who say, well, preacher, tonight I'm going home. My dad will be angry tonight too. So how do you counsel a kid like that? I'll tell you how you counsel them. Jesus can be with you. He can help you. He can enable you. He can grace you. So friends, all I want you to understand, by the way, let me just simply say that it's important, this is not the message, but I'm just saying, if people have said things to you that are not true, you need to renounce the lie. If you've ever heard, you can't do anything right, that is a lie, because the Bible says, I can do all things through Christ. If somebody's told you you're worthless, that is not true. The Bible says, if you're saved, you're accepted in the beloved, and he loves you with an everlasting love. See, so you've got to reject some of that lie. That's why he'll heal you. The Word of God is full of stuff that will heal you. That's the right place to go. So the question for anyone in this room, if you got an addictive behavior, an addictive lifestyle, that means you got a wrong mindset. And if you got a wrong mindset, you got a wrong root. So the question is, what are you going to do about it? Can I ask every head bowed, please, and every eye closed? I'm just going to ask one question, one simple question. One question. How many in this room would simply say, preacher, I'm not perfect. God knows I'm not perfect. But best I can tell, I don't think that I have any low-grade resentment, bitterness, hatred, or anger toward anything or anyone, dead or alive. Yes, you can be bitter at dead people. Best I can tell, I don't think I have any resentment, bitterness, hatred, anger toward anything or anyone. Would you raise your hand, please? Raise it high and just put it right back down. Now, I appreciate the honesty of several of you. Many of you kept your hands down. And I want to challenge you, gang, right now to just take a quick step of faith. I'm going to ask our squad leaders to at least briefly address this with the table and get some feedback on Hebrews 12. I know you've got another passage ready, but let me encourage you to do that. But I'm going to just do something real quickly, just a couple minutes here, because I think a step of faith is good. If God has spoken to your heart and you say, preacher, this message described me, and I've got an addictive root in my life, I got some pain, some wounds, and I haven't responded right. I've gotten mad about it, or I've gotten discouraged about it. And I see that's unbelief. Then I'm going to ask you right now, just get out of your chair and kneel right where you are and just tell God you're going to trust him. Would you do that? Would you do at least that right now? Just get out of your chair wherever you are and get on your knees and tell God, I've despised you or I've gotten discouraged, whatever it might be. God, I've despised you or I've gotten discouraged. And God, I want to right now, best I know how, I want to take a step and say, God, I want to trust you. I want to trust you under the difficulty, the pain that I've got in my life. I want to trust you to heal me. So I'm just going to give a moment of quiet. You take time to talk to God. When you're done praying, you can just return to your chair. Now that's a first step, young person. Let me encourage you. In a moment, Mr. Bosler is going to come and close and then tell you where to go. That's a first step. Let me encourage you to tell somebody so they can be there to encourage you and help you. If your parents are here, tell them. If a youth pastor or pastor is here, tell them. If maybe that's not here, tell your squad leader. Or maybe tell your squad what God's doing in your heart. And I know they'll pray for you. I know people will. So Brother Bosler, you come and close.